everyone. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman, and welcome to What Women Must Know. Thank you for joining me once again for an opportunity to have a great conversation. And as you know, this show is all about empowering you with truthful information so you can make informed decisions that will really support you and support your family and the people and friends in your life that really matter. So again, thanks for joining me. And if you are listening for the first time, please, please, please go up to my website, whatwomenmustknow.com. Although that's about to change very shortly, I have a new website, and when that gets released, I'm going to have an amazing announcement. So hang in there, everyone. But for the time being, go to whatwomenmustknow.com, and that's my Facebook page as well, because these wonderful shows will be sent to you. I send them out to my list every week so you don't get to miss them at all. And also I have special reports and ebooks and all sorts of deals and such that I send out to everyone. So go over there, the website, What Women Must Know. It'll also appear on my Facebook page and you won't miss out, because it's all about getting the knowledge that will allow you truly to make the decisions that support you. And this world, it's more and more difficult to find truthful information, and that's what this show is all about, and inspiring you to live a better, healthier life. So, to that end, we're going to have a great conversation about real-life solutions for overscheduled women. Now, the men listening to the show are still allowed to listen, I want you to know, because men are overscheduled, but women are way overscheduled in their lives with dire consequences. So we're going to be exploring how the giving you solutions of how you can get out of the overscheduled life, what that means, the different types of ways we overschedule ourselves, and really understanding a strategy to support us in staying balanced. And my guest today is Yvonne Talley. She is the author of the wonderful new book, Breaking Up with Busy, Real Life Solutions for Overscheduled Women. And I just want to share a little bit about Yvonne. Yvonne Talley is the author of Breaking Up with Busy and leads meditation and de-stressing programs for corporations, individuals, and private groups in Silicon Valley. An NLP master practitioner, Yvonne co-founded Poised Incorporated and a Pilates and wellness training studio. It is the founder of Sisterhood of the Traveling Scarves, a charity that provides headscarves to cancer patients. Her website is YvonneTalley.com. So it's a great pleasure to have Yvonne on the show today. And hello, Yvonne, and welcome.
Well, hello, Cheryl. It's wonderful to be with you.
Well, it's great to have you on and to be talking about this issue. You know, I have shared this with my listeners in the past, but it's really appropriate to talk about it again, being an overscheduled woman, because when I was in my early 40s, which is a little while ago, but I really operated as a model that to be successful in the world, it was defined by how many hours a week you worked, how many projects you were on, how little sleep you could get, and how much money you could make in the process. So there I was in my early 40s. I was, I had a really successful psychotherapy practice. I was doing trainings of one sort or the other for 48 weekends out of the year. My weekly schedule ran about 60, maybe 70 hours. I was eating late at night. I wasn't sleeping. I was not only doing trainings and courses, but I was putting on a conference and starting another little side business. That's all. That's all that was going on in my life, you know. And no wonder my body just fell to pieces. And that's when I had arthritis and severe allergies and thyroid imbalances, Hashimoto's thyroiditis, autoimmune conditions, insomnia, panic attacks. And as I like to say, other than that, I was totally healthy. But it was a big wake-up call for me that I was so totally out of balance, and I had to reevaluate everything. And it led me on a new direction in my life, by the way, which was towards writing a book about hormones and becoming a naturopathic doctor. So it served its purpose, but I'll tell you, it was a hard lesson to learn. And it took me many years to recover from that. So we're going to be talking about how to break up with busyness, because I'm going to tell you, we are all overscheduled. So thank you so much for writing this book and for being here to explore this. So let's just jump in. What's your experience with breaking up with busy in your life?
Well, they always say to write about what you know. So this was the perfect entree for me. Just as you, I was on that same loop, that same hamster wheel, you know, working long hours, eating late at night, lack of sleep. And I was so busy teaching other people how to have a vibrant lifestyle and a healthy lifestyle that I missed all of my signs, just as you did, about where my body and my mind was headed. And where I ended up was in the back of an ambulance headed to the emergency room at the hospital, thinking I was having a heart attack, when in fact I was having a panic attack brought on by my inability to handle my own stress and to create some good boundaries around my life. So this was a real wake-up call for me, that I would say that we have these exclamation marks in life, and this was certainly one of them for me. And those exclamation marks are hopefully an end to something and a new beginning to another, and this was my new beginning. It scared me so much that I put into process some real changes that I would bring me balance in my life. And I went on to find solutions, and I wanted to share those with the women that I not only was in my practice, that I was training, that I was teaching, but for myself first, because I had to heal myself first. And what I realized is all those solutions were right there at my fingertips, that I had, in fact, been teaching this over a long period of time, just not using them for myself. So that's where the book came in, where I was able to organize that and put it in a clear pathway of solutions and practices, so that we can not only be aware of the signs of what this busy culture and the impact it has on us, but we can have solutions and practices that can help us one step at a time to develop and build a life that is much more in balance.
That's such a big word, to be balanced, Mm-hmm. When I had that experience of my body just telling me this programming that I was operating with wasn't working anymore, I really had to take a look at what was going on, and I realized that I was caught up in a cultural programming. And in our culture, we're programmed to operate with taking on as much as we can, to make as much money as we can, to be successful, quote unquote, to be successful, quote unquote, by, you know, having all these achievements after our name, that we can have a resume of what we're doing. But it is a model that really doesn't work for anybody, but especially difficult for women, because our hormones are so much more connected and tied in with this constant stress, as you said, the hamster wheel, that we feel it, and it manifests more obviously and more frequently in all these imbalances. And that's what I noticed. So I had to change the paradigm. I had to realize I was stuck in a paradigm that was honoring working constantly for recognition, achievement, to a paradigm where I needed to understand my own needs and to find that balance so I could walk a path that would keep me healthy but also happy and sane. And it was a very different path. So that was profound, like you. That was an exclamation point in my life. I want to ask you to begin with, how prevalent is this behavior in our culture? Is this just, you know, a few of us, so we're working women? Who is really affected by this? And do you see it as a cultural programming?
I see it as a shift from that's very layered as far as the busy goes. So we have to back up a little bit when we talk about busy, because there's a tendency that some people might have that experience of just hearing the word busy of, oh, that's so frivolous, it's so really nothing. I mean, you're making the choice to be busy. Well, that's true, but it's much more layered than that. And there's three really important components that I see that play into it, in addition to what you stated, and that is the hormones. There's economics, there's technology, and there's this disconnection from nature. So what has happened is this idea of being busy has become, there's almost a status symbol attached to it, if you will. And it's a way, it's a promise that if we stay busy, we become part of this elite pack of doers and change makers. And when we are in, when our reference group, the people that we associate with and identify with, are doing something, for us to be a part of that group, then we will do that same something. And this is kind of how this starts to get set up. So when this idea of busy gets entrenched into our culture, it happens, you know, one by one, obviously, but then it starts to become, the behavior starts to become the culture. And when economics grow and incomes rise, time is seen as more valuable, and we don't want to waste it. So this is that first piece of the economics, and so we become very busy. And as I said, there's a status attached to it, and it makes us feel important and valuable. I've got things to do. You've got things to do. We connect. We communicate. You get me. I get you. We're busy. And so that starts this pace. And then playing into that is this technology of this constant comparison. We can see the world now in a moment everywhere, and we choose what we want to take a look at. And so when we've got the social media so prevalent in our culture as it now, it's so easy for us to say, well, that person is doing that. I'm just like that person, or I want to be like that person, so I should be doing that also. And then these shoulds start to get set up. So it's, as I said, it's a very layered thing that begins to happen. And this idea of technology said it was going to, you know, we'd have all these conveniences and it would make it easier for us. But what we ended up doing is we didn't check in with the behaviors. So we've taken on all these conveniences of technology, and we just keep filling up that space that we think that we're making for something else, which we are. We're just busy, busy, busy. So there's a difference, and then we get attached to that feeling. Then we get used to that feeling. It becomes our juice. And if we're not doing something, we forgot how to be in a place to just be rather than to do. So as I said, it's very layered. The brain gets involved in this. The body gets involved in it. And it's not just the behavior. It's this comparison, this technology. And economics has a lot to do with it as well. And then that last piece, if I could just say, the more we disconnect from nature, the more we get into that space of always being on that pace, that busy pace, and where we let all these other distractions come in and we don't slow down. Because we know when we go into nature that all of our senses can be stimulated and refreshed and nurtured, the sights, the sounds, the smells, and we have now disconnected from that on a scale that I believe has become, you know, unhealthy for all of us. And you mentioned earlier about men. Yes, men, keep listening, because busy doesn't just happen in a bubble. When busy pushes its way into our significant relationships, it leaves very little room for emotional intimacy to occur. You know, when we're distracted, what message are we sending to our partners, to our children, to our spouses, whoever we're sharing our lives with on an emotional intimate level? So it forces its way in, it gets into all those relationships, and it trickles out. So it's really, men aren't as busy as women. We do have the economics. You know, 2/3 of women working outside of the home have school-aged children. Women are still earning about 80 cents on the dollar compared to men. And if you're a woman of color, that drops down to about 63 cents. And in addition to that, women are still taking about 80% of what's called non-paid work, all of the things that we have to do to keep life going, so to speak. So you can see how layered it is and how many things are set up to make this busy pace continue. But I always say awareness can't be undone. And as soon as we become aware of something, then we can give ourselves the option to make a shift and a change. And that was really important for me to get that message across in the book.
And as you were saying, even though men get caught up in this, but women are doing so many jobs, and they're doing more jobs in terms of being, you know, whatever their profession is, and then coming home and being the mother and taking care of domestics and trying to keep the relationship. And for women, it's their friends. They have to spend time with their friends, or there's a need by their friends to have them connect. So they're pulled in so many different directions for attention, and that leaves very little time for them to take care of themselves.
Well, that's a big piece of it, Cheryl, is that self-care piece. So, you know, I love what Gloria Steinem said years ago. You can't have it all if you have to do it all, and it's so true. And we set out that we, you know, as far as being, and you know, on this equal playing field, we've got the family down. We know how to manage and master that. We've got the career, you know, the career down. We know that we can do both. But what we forgot was this self-care piece, vitally important for to sustain this type of lifestyle. As far as if we're going to be the primary person in the family. And that doesn't mean you have to have children, because it's very likely that an aging parent or ill sibling, as a woman, you'll be the one that will care for them in the family, more likely than the man in the family. That's the cultural setup of that. It's very important that we as women remember, and men, but particularly women, because we have this constant, as you said, pull, that self-care is not an option. Self-care is absolutely critical for sustaining wellness, emotional, spiritual, physical wellness.
And maybe we can talk a bit more about that piece, because women are really vulnerable to getting burnt out, but may not realize it, may not recognize the signs until something like what you experienced happens, when you're pushed to such a degree that your body just, you know, can't take it anymore, and you had this severe panic attack. It must have been really severe to warrant taking you to the emergency room and thinking it was a heart attack. It wasn't just a little, you know, uncomfortable anxiety feeling. It was a full-on experience. So how are we to know when we're going beyond our limits, when our body and our whole being is saying, you know, I'm being left out of this equation and I can't take it anymore?
That's beautifully said. Well, I think what happens is how. Well, I'll answer that in two parts. How will we know? It's very difficult to listen to our body when there's, and our mind and our spirit, when there's a lot of noise. So the first thing, and this is where I often get pushback, especially where I live, right in the middle of Silicon Valley. I mean, Facebook is down the street, Google's around the corner, basically. So it's a very, you know, lot of technology here. But the first thing we have to do is create enough quiet space. And if we look at quiet space as not an option, that it is absolutely required to keep a healthy mind and keep a healthy body, as important as good nutrition and physical exercise. So once we can adopt that attitude towards quiet space, and what I mean by that is quiet meditation, walk in nature, whatever it might be, and we realize that we know this now through neuroscience and medical advances, that this is a very important part for sustaining really good wellness. For women, because I think there's a difference, we are taught very much of the time, not all of us, but many of us, most of us, just be quiet, get along. Don't make waves. Smile. Be nice. And this is a message that gets sent to us on a regular basis, quite frequently. So what we have to do is we have to accept and acknowledge and be really okay with the fact that speaking up isn't something that's rude. Speaking up isn't something that's being insensitive. Speaking up is not trying to be selfish, although there's nothing wrong with being selfish. It has nothing to do with that. It's about setting healthy boundaries. And that's the first thing that I try to help my clients with and remind myself and my 25-year-old daughter that boundaries are like handrails on a staircase. Everyone feels better when they're there. So setting them, maintaining them, and sticking to them is not only a self-care, it also helps care for the relationships that you have. So setting boundaries is fundamental in maintaining healthy relationships and personal well-being. And I think often what happens is we as women get on this free-flowing to-do list thinking that we have to be the one that's going to make everything be okay. And if we don't, we end up feeling guilty. I can honestly say more times than not, I have heard my clients say, but I feel guilty when I go to the gym. It seems so selfish. Yes, again, selfish is not a bad word. And going to the gym or working out or doing those self-care, you'll, again, be able to sustain the relationship with yourself and others for a long time. I have seldom heard a male client say, I feel guilty when I go play golf. I feel guilty when I go to the gym. I feel guilty. I don't think I've ever, certainly in my practice, heard that before. So it's something that we have to get really comfortable with in saying yes to ourselves before we jump at saying yes to everyone else.
And that's such a big programming right there, because I've experienced it personally, and I saw it in my practice. I mean, I see it in my practice now as a naturopath when women are coming with all their problems, but underneath it is this part of them that's driven, and their cortisol is sky high. They're so exhausted. They're stressed. I mean, once you are stressed, once you have lost the ability to recover from stress and recover your adrenal function, once you've lost that because you have been so constant in the outer going rather than the inner reflection and taking time, when those adrenals get exhausted, it's like a house of cards that fall down. You can't think. It actually affects your hippocampus, your short-term memories. Your immune system is compromised. Your hormones go out of balance. It can affect your thyroid. Can affect your estrogen levels. You start putting on weight because high cortisol will initiate high insulin and it's fat storage. I mean, you know, it's just, you know, a downhill slide. And that's, you know, one of the reasons why, if there's nothing else that can compel women to reconsider, it's how it will be impacting their health for the long term.
Yes, I'm glad that you bring that up. It's absolutely critical. You know, I'm happy and encouraged by all of the neuroscience that is around this type of behavior, this type of choices that we make, where we allow the stressors to be so rampant in our lives and not take the time to really care for ourselves, because as you said, the long-term effects can be very difficult to come back from. You know, I mentioned earlier about being in nature, and this is one really simple solution, which I find really interesting. You know, just simply taking a few deep breaths engages our vagus nerve, which triggers within our nervous system to slow our heart rate, lower our blood pressure, and to help decrease that cortisol. Just taking a deep breath in. So when you go into nature, I had one client, I remember she said to me, I followed what you said. You said to go out into nature for 3 minutes. And I've done it every day this week, and it might only be 3 minutes, but it's made such a difference for me. Just stepping out, taking a deep breath in, a few deep breaths in, 1 minute, 2 minutes, 3 minutes. As that progresses and becomes a healthy habit of self-care, imagine where you can go with that. You know, you can go from 1 minute to 3 minutes to 15 minutes, whatever it might be. But the benefits are everything that you just said, the lowering of the cortisol, the help, you know, the lowering the blood pressure, helping boost the immune system, increasing the dopamine. All of these things happen when we create that quiet space for meditation, or when we just simply take a few deep breaths on a consistent basis, taking that mental, emotional time out. Really important. And that's why I always like to say to people, you can look at it as a big, huge shift. And, you know, oh my goodness, I have to do all this just to be able to get into a better mental and physical space to self-care. No, you don't. Start small, one small step at a time. If you're not doing anything from a mindful standpoint at this point, the last thing I'm going to tell a client is, well, you need to meditate 15 minutes in the morning and 15 minutes at night. It won't happen. It's like telling somebody when they come in and they want to lose weight, well, that's it. You haven't exercised for 20 years. You're going to get on a 30-minute-a-day program. It's not going to work. It'll set them up for failure. So we need to accept the fact that we're here, and now because we're aware, we can start to make some shifts and changes to move the needle in the other direction towards more mindfulness and more wellness so we can sustain our relationships and we can bring happiness and joyful experiences into our lives on a regular basis.
Yeah, well said. And in addition to that, really be a role model for our children, which is another important piece of this whole process we're talking about.
So important, because we model that behavior. You know, it's like when we're standing there looking down at our phone and, you know, checking our social media or emailing, and our child is standing next to us and saying, "Mom, did you hear what I said?" And the mother stands there and, "No, I got it, I heard you," without making any eye contact whatsoever. So we have to remember that, you know, if we're doing this, the trickle-out effect, let's just take a moment and say, "This is not how I want to be in a relationship. This is, I, you know, what do I want? What do I want to make for my life on a daily basis? And how do I want it to impact those that I influence?" Again, even if you don't have children, there are other people in your life that you're influencing. If you're working in a, you know, career outside of the home, you're influencing people there. So one shift at a time, when we start to make those shifts within ourselves, then we lead by example for others, as you said, to shift it.
Right. Absolutely. So I want to ask you about your term you use, the overscheduled woman, and maybe you can define a little bit more what that is and some clues if women don't already know that they're overscheduled, that they might become aware of the fact. And I, you know, we kind of laugh about that, but I think for so many women, that just seems like the way life is, you know, going from one thing to the next with an inability to say no and, you know, on to helping someone or the kids or whatever, taking on tons of things, that they forget they overscheduled themselves. They forget. Because they don't even have a reference point of what to be underscheduled is like. So help us understand, what are some of the signs of this overscheduled woman syndrome?
Yes. Well, what's interesting is I think that what happens, again, is the body and the mind get set up for this pace, this juice. It becomes what we are familiar with and used to. I remember my mom. And I always tell this story, after all of us kids were, and she was a single mother of six, and she often worked two jobs at a time. And I remember even after we were all grown, grandkids and everything, and we would come to visit her, and she would just be busy doing things. And we'd say, "Mom, sit down, put your feet up, have a cup of tea." And it felt uncomfortable for her on all levels because she wasn't used to doing it anymore. So that's the first thing, we get used to it. But to answer your question about the overscheduled woman, there's a couple of things that jump out. She's well-intentioned and an over-deliverer. Like you said earlier, she goes and just continues giving. So that's a big part of it. And the over-giver is also a part of it. And I think most women have felt like they're an overscheduled woman at some point in their life, especially, again, when family and career are being built simultaneously. So it's that get-it-done attitude, that frequently opting out of doing something for herself when someone else close to her requests her time. And she often puts herself last and has this variegated sense of doing too much and not enough. And it's that you know, tribal chant, so to speak, make it happen, get it done, be the best, give it your all, and then do it again. So this imbalance between obligation and expectation and the lack of personal replenishment leaves many women feeling as though they just can't catch up with their lives. And in a nutshell, that's an OSW. You know, that part about opting out of doing things for herself. The other thing is that one of the things I find quite often, and I have 10 signs in the book, and that is the things that she once enjoyed now have become a burden. It's like it becomes one more thing that she has to do on her list, where she might have enjoyed going maybe and meeting her friends and having lunch, or, you know, taking an afternoon to hike or whatever it might be. Now it becomes a burden. I don't have time for that. It's just one more thing that I have to do, and I'm going to opt out of it for the day. And that opting out for the day becomes the pattern and the habit. And it, like I said, I think many women have felt this way. And I use five different types in the book, the time optimist, the perfectionist, the sorority sister, the alpha, and the pleaser. And I think what many women will find is that there's a little bit of one or two of those or more characteristics that are these types in all of us. And at the core of it is this overgiving and this constant pace and this feeling, you know, I'm going to get it done and I'm going to make it happen. And I'm going to make sure everybody is taken care of. And if I get to myself, that's just a bonus. We have to switch that around because, as you said, we're not going to be able to sustain ourselves. We're going to end up with some kind of health crisis or an exclamation mark, if you will, if we continue that pace.
You know, we just get so out of balance, and we forget the consequences of not being in rhythms. What I've learned is that women are so cyclical. We have cycles, and we have menstrual cycles. We're affected seasonal cycles, stages of life cycles, hormonal cycles, and we need to honor those cycles. Because it's an, you know, it's an out-breath, it's an in-breath, it's the, you know, the waxing of the moon, it's the waning of the moon, and we're affected by all these energies and all these cycles. And it's something we're not really taught in our culture, although it's been taught in the past in cultures that are more indigenous in nature. They understand how women are so intimately connected to cycles. And when we disconnect from the awareness of cycles, and we kind of live in a man's world, which is on, you know, go all the time, we really get disconnected from ourselves, and we get caught in this trap that is set for us by the expectations of our culture. And that was such a way out for me. I started to learn about how important it is to honor cycles. I call that the emergence of the feminine. Really getting in touch with the feminine wisdom and working with these cycles and understanding how important it is to listen to cycles, to honor cycles, to behave according to the needs of each cycle, to get back into balance. It was a profound transformation for me, Yvonne, when I had that revelation and started to live it.
Yeah, that's a really important part I think that you bring up too, is that the cycle of life, so to speak, and us not really being aware of that or honoring it on a deep level. And that's why I talk about, you know, connecting with nature. Again, it might seem something just so simple, but and food has a big part of this as well. I'm sure you found this in your work. You know, food is, when we go to the grocery store and we buy food from all other parts of the country all year round and we're eating the same thing all year round, our body is not going to get, I believe, is not going to get replenished within that cycle of season. So being in nature allows us to be more aware of this. Going to farmer's market allows us to be more aware of this. There's so many things that can happen, even, you know, bringing that type of lifestyle habit about going back into farmers market, connecting with the farmers, connecting with other people, being in the sunlight, seeing what's fresh, and then replenishing your body in that way. So that's just a side note of that. But these energies that we produce during these times of stress and chaos are the energies that will end up making us feel, or, you know, bringing on those experiences of unhealthiness within ourselves. So how do we get back to that space? We have to have some solutions and some practices to allow us to get back to a space or in a space where we're creating those healthy boundaries. And it's very difficult for us to be aware of what our cycles are because it's very subtle, but yet it's very powerful when the noise is too loud. So we have to quiet the space that we live in. And that's why I always go back to this idea of meditation and quiet space, because when we quiet that space, then we can actually realize that we do have cycles in life and that they need to be honored for good wellness and good health, good clear thinking, problem solving, communication, all these things that we use every single day. That we can't hear those, we can't be attuned to that if the noise is too loud. And when I talk about noise, I'm talking about distractions, from all areas, not just technology, but from just the noise outside. And it's pretty hard in our culture to disengage from just the simple noises that are occurring. But we can certainly create enough space, 1 to 3 minutes every day as a practice, to quiet our thoughts. And when we honor our thoughts, everything else falls into place.
So let's explore that a bit more, Yvonne, because I know you teach mindfulness. I practice mindfulness meditation, and I just have to share this story, what happens when we are not mindful. So this happened the other day to me, and it was such a big lesson. I was getting ready to go into a car wash, and a friend called. So I got very involved in this conversation. I didn't want to say no, so I'm carrying on this conversation. I'm trying to plug in the code for the car wash, and I start, continuing on this conversation and drive into the car wash. And as we're talking away, I noticed a little red light that says, don't go any further, was on, and then it went off. And it was like, why isn't this thing working anymore? So I thought, maybe I'm too far, so I backed up. And all of a sudden I heard something clanging, and I realized that I had gone into the car wash with my bicycle rack on the back of my car.
Oh.
And when I pulled out, I saw a part of the car wash kind of dangling there in midair. It's like, I don't know what I created, but, it hit me. I said, I had the most unmindful moment I could possibly imagine. I was totally unconscious of where I was and what I was doing, and boy, did it get me into trouble. So I kind of slunk off with this soapy foam on my car and left, hoping no one would see me. I felt so stupid, but it was this unmindful moment. So let's talk about mindfulness, because I think this is so important for us to understand and to begin to implement into our lives. I just wouldn't want to live my life without the awareness of mindfulness and working with a simple meditation to help bring this about. So tell us about it, what it does, why it's important, and maybe some simple strategies of how we can start doing this in our life.
So I call it the mindful practices, and it's a way to reset your mindset again. It takes conscious effort. It's a practice. It takes, just like you said, you had that unmindful moment, which is, that's how we develop habits. That's the way the mind is very efficient, is when we develop habits. It doesn't have to be conscious and mindful. It just produces that habit so that we can reserve energy. That's great when we're developing habits that are gratifying, fulfilling, and resourceful. But when we do it on the opposite, which all of us do, and we get into these habits that, for example, a lot of traffic, I'm late, so I yell and scream behind the wheel. Nobody can hear me, but just think about what that habit is creating within my body. So simple things like that. So when we bring the light of this phenomenal power into the right mindset, it can give us, methods for tapping into and creating solid foundations for conscious decision making and change. And if we approach mindfulness as a way of being, because it's not something we do, that the focus of mindfulness is not about the doing of it. The focus of mindfulness is that when chaos and disorganization and uncertainty shows up, which it does, that's part of life. When it shows up, we can remain in that mindful moment. We can remain in that mindful mind, that we don't attach our own emotions to it. Because when we attach our emotions to whatever it is going on outside of us, that's when we are going to lose our ability to stay in the moment and stay in that calm space. Because it doesn't matter what's going on outside around us. What matters is how we're going to handle it within. So mindfulness is a practice. Meditation is certainly one of those things that we can do. And even just a mantra, every day, if you're struggling with setting better boundaries and you find yourself saying yes to everything, I have an exercise in the book called Count Your Yesings. And if you're saying yes to everything and you find it difficult to deliver a healthy no, one of the things that you can do is stand in front of the mirror. Because if you're not used to giving a healthy no, and remember, no is not to be unhelpful. It's not to be disrespectful or rude to anybody. It's about setting your own personal boundaries. And if you're uncomfortable saying no, then you're going to say yes to everything. And so just standing in front of the mirror and reciting no, finding your rhythm, your sound, your tone, whatever it might be. No, thank you. No, I'm not available for that today. Because I was brought up that no, you should never start a sentence with no, and it's not a complete sentence. And now I've taught my own daughter, no is a complete sentence, and you can start a sentence with it. So it's how we deliver it, and it's the intention behind what we're saying, not so much what we're saying. It's how we say it and our intention behind it. So one of the first things I always tell women is, when's the last time you said no to something? Well, I can't do that. I feel guilty. I would feel bad. What if I let her down or him down? Well, let's back that up. Let's see where it feels right for you. What is it that is something that you could have said in exchange for what you did say? So it's, you know, just developing that ability to say no. And I always say, say the no, deliver it with a compliment, and make sure that compliment is a genuine, heartfelt compliment. Because sometimes it's very difficult for people to hear no, especially people who have never heard it before. Maybe they're used to everybody saying yes to them, and that's why you're in a relationship with them, because you're one of those yesers. So we have to find a balance between the no and the yes, and it's very important for setting good boundaries for ourselves.
That is a great lesson. You know, I would often give the challenge to my patients, and well, as a psychotherapist, even as a naturopath now, because no can be such a big leap for what women are used to, how they're used to replying. So I would always say to them, listen, just say this phrase, let me think about it, I'll get back to you. So that's kind of an intermediary step, right? Before you get to the no, feel comfortable with no, at least put it on hold for a little bit, and you can decide yes, you can decide no. But sometimes that gap, that taking a moment, a little breathing space, can let you assess what it is that you really want to do. And often it is a no, and sometimes it is a yes, but at least you have permission to think about it rather than just do an automatic yes.
And I think permission is so important. To give yourself permission is just vital, I believe, for setting those healthy boundaries. And with the example that you just gave as far as I'll get back to you, I love that, because I think that's in my no for novices, that you want to, it's that softener that we put around the no. You know, it's that thank you for including me, let me get back to you, I've got to check my schedule, and that can get you out of that immediate moment of saying yes to somebody. So no doesn't have to have the word no in it. What it's about is being able to set those boundaries about around what is going to be best for you. You know, we all have to show up for our friends and family and our coworkers, and there's going to be times where the yes is inconvenient. That's okay. That's a part of life, but it doesn't have to be a yes to everything. It doesn't have to be a no to everything. Again, as we talked about earlier, it's finding that balance, and that idea of permission is key in making that happen, because we forget that we have denied ourselves permission many times. It becomes unfamiliar to us to grant ourselves our own permission for being who we are, rather not than defining us by what we do.
It's a big step. It's a huge healing for women. This is really profound. It's a profound process for women to embark upon, because they're really claiming themselves if they can start listening through the ways you were talking about. And I know you've got lots of strategies in the book to begin to honor your needs and honor yourself is how you get everything else going right in your world and in your life. If you put yourself last and you can't say no, it's like a top spinning out of control, and everything and everyone you touch is going to be pushed out of kilter as well. So it's so profound, you know, that what you're saying is so profound in how to get one's life to work, that people really need to pay attention and to listen to what this conversation is about and what you're offering in your book. So, you know, we have a little bit of time left, and I want to be sure you talk about your, aside from the strategies, I know you have 52 strategies in your book of how to begin to break up with busy, But let's talk about your Vibrant Living online workshop, because I think that looks like a great strategy that people need to know about and how that can support them in this process.
Oh, thank you for bringing that up. Yeah, that, you know, I always talk about discovering our potential, because that's really important, and then developing our power, which is part of that is permission. Because when we do those first two things, then we can deploy our passion. And that, again, might sound frivolous, but I promise you, when you start living your life after you've developed and you've discovered, and you could, then you can deploy your passion, everything will shift in that space. Just going and doing something because you really, really enjoy it and you feel very, very committed to it can change your whole physical being. So Vibrant Living, that's what that's about. It's about discovering that potential, because often none of us have ever slowed down enough to really say to ourselves, what is my potential? What have I done in life where I have brought forth my attributes, my strong characteristics? What have I done? Where have I been? What have I felt? And what was I using from within myself, my own personal resources, my own attributes? That's how we develop our potential. And we forget about all the things that we may have done in the past that have brought forth our potential, have used our power from within, and that we feel passionate about. So it's waking that part of ourselves up again. And then once we do that, then we can start to develop those potentials as our own power, our own internal power, as we, you know, what's going on within us will be reflected in our outer world. So when we get it right from within, when we get our thinking straight, everything else will flow from that. And that's when we can really begin to live that passion. We can't ever forget that passion, living with those strong intentions and desires and convictions. It is inspiring to other people. And if we can wake up our own selves and live that passion, just think about what we are, the beacon we are to others as well. And if we're all here on this planet connected, it's a really powerful way to start moving passion in a grander scheme for all of us.
Yeah, wonderful. That's what it's about. So if I want to go back to your free online program, I just want to give people resources so they really can follow up with what we're talking about and start implementing it in their lives. So you've got this online program, right, that is called Vibrant Living, and that's available for people if they buy their book. Is that how it works?
Yes, it actually begins June 1st, and with the purchase of my book, they get access into the online Vibrant Living. That begins, I believe it's June 1st. I might have to check that. It might be June 6th. And they'll have access to that. And it's three different workshops that will be incorporating this Vibrant Living.
Oh, that's great. So they just buy the book, and what happens then? How do they actually find themselves into, you know, in your Vibrant Living online course? What do they have to do once they buy the book?
Yeah, it's all on the website, what they'll be required to do, but they purchase the book and then they give us their purchase number, I believe it is, and then they get automatically entered into that access to workshop.
Oh, isn't that wonderful? So if you are listening to this conversation and are curious about the workshop that Yvonne is offering, I suggest you go to her website, which is really easy, Yvonne Talley, TALLY.com, and learn about it and pick up a copy of her book, which I think is a really good idea because there are some great strategies in there, and participate so you can be supported. I think a lot of the healing for women is being in community, being able to be part of an experience and be reinforced and supported and listen to other women's stories and realize we're not so different and alone, and you know, just be encouraged to continue the journey for themselves.
Yes, I would agree with that we do find a lot of healing in community for all of us. And we are not alone. We are more alike than different, all of us.
So in the few minutes we have left, Yvonne, what else do you want to share with us that you think women really need to understand, or maybe some tips you want to offer women so we can begin this journey of breaking up with busy? I love that title.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I really want to point out is that we unknowingly, when we get into this state of busy, we unknowingly manufacture this stamp of approval for other women to do the same. And we are importing that overscheduled mindset to the next generation of women. So I want women to be able to step forward into their light and light a path, not only for themselves, but for other women. And together we can change that paradigm of what having it all means. And in the process, establish a juggernaut, you know, a huge, powerful force of change so that every woman finds herself to be enough. To be enough. It doesn't mean that we have to be all the time. We need to slow down, keep the big picture front and center, take 3 minutes a day to meditate, perhaps start our day with a mantra, and know that we can ask ourselves this question: will it be important tomorrow, in a week, or in a month, in a year? And this is a great way for us to gauge our involvement and to seek solutions and continue to disengage from that busy, busy behavior.
Yeah, that's wonderful. So I just want to thank you for sharing with us today your wisdom. I encourage people to pick up a copy of Breaking Up with Busy, Real Life Solutions for Overscheduled Women. And again, we're talking with Yvonne Talley, and her website is YvonneTalley.com. That's TALLY.com. And I love the fact that if you purchase the book right away, you will be able to be part of her Vibrant Living online workshop for free. Are you going to be doing that again? Do you have several of them scheduled in the future?
Yes, I do. We have actually quite a few scheduled going forward. So this will be the first set that we'll be doing, as I said, begins in June.
Great. Good. Okay. Well, fantastic. I think a lot of people would be interested in following up with that. And I just want to say one thing, just as we're talking about taking care of oneself and breaking up with busy and honoring your needs. And I didn't mention this in the beginning of the show, but I will be facilitating or initiating, I would say, a group of people to go to the Rhythmia Life Advancement Center, which is in Costa Rica. I've talked about this before, and I've interviewed some of the principals involved with this amazing retreat center. And this is a week of total spiritual and physical and emotional and mental transformation. So it's February 10th. It's for one complete week. If you'd like more information, you just need to go to rhythmia.com/Selman. Put that /Selman in, because the people at Rhythmia, I've been there 3 times before, and I've had 2 groups come with me. So they are very generous to our group, and they're offering $1,000 off the each person for the week. So it's an amazing opportunity, amazing deal we're getting. And that is a way to totally nourish yourself on all levels. So if you're interested, if you're curious to find out more about it, I will be sending more information out. That's this February 10th, the week of February 10th. And go check it out. You may want to actually jump in and have a week where you just are there nurturing yourself. So think about it. Maybe it's calling you to come along with me. And I just want to thank you all for joining me again today. I want to thank Yvonne Talley for being with us. And, you know, as always, my message to everyone listening is this: always honor the wisdom of your feminine self. Because for me, listening to our feminine self, and that's also true for men, guys, you have that voice as well. You'll always be guided to the right place to do the right thing and to be who you really are to be. So always honor the wisdom of your feminine self. And until next week, take care. See you then. Bye for now.